Hello and welcome to Diversity in Research. My name is Lachlan Smith.
And I am Jakob Feldfoss Christensen.
Today we're reflecting on, it's another episode, in effect, reflecting on the IANA conference that we were at in Prague a few weeks ago. And we've got two short interviews for you to listen to today. The first interview, you're going to hear our chat with two people from ARMA, the Association for Research Managers in the UK. So we'll be talking to Sapna Mowaha, who is the deputy chair, I think I'm right in saying. Yeah, deputy chair of ARMA. And alongside of her is Lorna Wilson, who is the Director of Research, Development and Operations at Durham University. And we spent a few minutes reflecting on their presentation at the conference, where they talked to us about what ARMA have been doing over the last, say, 3 years in regards to their EDI strategy, how they've gone about implementing it, the types of challenges that they've faced. So it's a really fascinating reflection on people who have tried to actually do something. Instead of talking about EDI as an organization, they've really been proactive in trying to do something to improve EDI and representation across ARMA. And then we go into our second conversation, which is?
Which is our conversation with Dipti Pandya, Dipti and Rosemary Matnick. And Dipti is a senior manager at University College Dublin, working with pre-award proposals. But in this context, we had her in for a chat because she is the chair-elect of IAMA, the European Association for Research Managers and Administrators. And with her, we also had Rosemary Matnick, Rosie, who works at who's the executive director at the vice president for research administration at the Lundquist Institute for Biomedical Innovation. But she's also the past president of Incura. And we had a chat with them about the role of representation, as they are both women of color and the first woman of color in both organizations. So we had, I think, a really fascinating conversation with them about the importance of representation in organizations like Incura and IAMA, and more broadly about how the role that plays for minority groups. But to begin with, let's listen to the conversation we had with Sapna and Lorna. And don't be confused by the double Scottish accent. It confused me as well. It can be kind of difficult, but it is. It was a really great conversation we had with them. So enjoy. And so I am joined here with by Lorna and Sapna, and you did the session right before our panel. You were the warm-up band for our panel at the IAMA conference, where you talked about how you have worked with EDI in ARMA. Can you perhaps tell us a bit about the session and some of the main points you made there?
Yeah, so we tried to give a bit of a flavour. There's obviously been lots going on at ARMA. This is something that for us really started getting formalised in 2019 when we established our EDI advisory group. And from there, we've had policies and initiatives and engagement events that have followed from that. We've had a real focus on transforming our leadership and making sure our leadership is, fit for leading in an inclusive way. We did some dedicated training and development with the board, and we've now stretched that out to everybody in the leadership positions across the organisation. We also talked about how we've engaged, how we've adapted our professional development and training to include EDI as a core element, and how we've transformed how we recruit people to ARMA so that we're really removing some of those barriers to participation that might have kept us less diverse in the past.
Yeah. You said recruitment. What would you mention some of the tools that you have worked with in that frame?
So we've done a number of different things, and Sapna's really led on this. I don't know, actually, Sapna, if you'd like to speak on this rather than me jumping in.
Sure, I don't mind, Lorna. So we've changed how we how we do job descriptions. Mm-hmm. So we now no longer base it on things like qualifications. It's very skills focused. Mm-hmm. We've introduced anonymization and things like that to the process. Now, that was actually probably a more controversial one than I was expecting it to be. Actually, when we discussed it at the EDI advisory group, there was a bit of pushback within the committee, because while it has been proven to make a difference in terms of when you anonymise, a more diverse group of candidates get through, mm-hmm. The evidence also shows that if you don't also have an intervention for the people on the other side, for the people on the panels doing the interview, it doesn't make a difference. It just delays the stage at which people experience discrimination.
Yeah.
So that was where a lot of, so that went hand in hand with that leadership piece that we did about everybody on the board, on the committees who participate mm-hmm. in interviewing for all of these posts also had to go through the training. We're keeping logs of who's done it. And actually we are, you only get to participate on those panels if you've done that training.
Oh, yeah. I like the point you made about, if you don't do it all, then you're just delaying where you meet the barriers. They will be there at some point or otherwise. Another point you made in the presentation is that it required a lot of self-reflection and self-assessment, and you obviously pointed to some of it here, but perhaps you could expand a bit on that, Lorna. What does that cover? Because I remember that as being a really interesting part of it.
So that was in the session, we kind of frame that around kind of changing how we lead. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the mistakes a lot of organisations make is they have, you know, great intentions around making EDI a priority and really embracing it, but doing that, it has to be so much more than just an intention. Mm-hmm. And what we felt was important was, as a board, we cannot authentically lead inclusively and have an inclusive organisation if we don't consider the knowledge and skills base that we have as a board, mm-hmm. thinking about how we lead. And one of the really interesting things that happened was we do regular skills audits, as a lot of boards do. And when we did the first skills audit that included asking about EDI, most of the boards thought they were very knowledgeable. And that was not the case. And again, but that reflected, I think, people's positive intention, and that everybody, most people, I think, would like to think they are an inclusive leader. But actually being an authentic inclusive leader means something quite different. So we did that skills audit. We obviously were introducing lots of different policies and things, but a really big part of what we did was training the board and upskilling the board. Mm-hmm. So we had some really brilliant training programs. So for example, we had anti-racism training delivered by Annette Hay, who works at Coventry University in the UK and works with Advance HE, which is a big organisation. And her sessions were brilliant. She really created a safe, positive environment to have quite challenging discussions. And I said this in the session, he would start off quite quiet and then get much louder towards the end.
Yeah.
And that is something that a lot of people find when they get more involved in EDI, is you need to get comfortable with the uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. It's really important that we have the discussions and that you reflect on what your own bias and times that, you know, where you lack understanding and lived experience in particular. And I think that was really interesting. So when we did the skills audit again recently, bearing in mind the board had anti-racism and anti-ableism training, for example, our kind of expectations had, I think, were more realistic in terms of a more varied picture, which I think was more of a true reflection. And I think that in itself is a positive outcome when you have a board that is far more aware now mm-hmm. of what it means to be knowledgeable about EDI and the progress that we've made, yes, but what we have to continue to commit to in terms of our own learning and our own reflections on how we lead.
Yeah. No, and I think you're right. It's what we, when we run workshops, etc., we usually say we don't want a group of more than 15 people, because that's the maximum where you can create that level of trust and people can actually ask their questions. And we can definitely see the moment that if we do something and ask, can it be recorded and be shared afterwards? And I don't have a problem with it. But I know there won't be any questions, and that's true. nobody's going to ask anything if it's recorded because they fear they'll ask something silly, which is, and then the whole point of it is gone. But I did, however, there was one thing. Now, looking at the slides again after the session, I don't think I noticed that much at the presentation itself, but Sabna and I, you and I have, in a different context, briefly touched on diversity data. How have you worked with diversity data in this context?
Yeah, so we're doing a big piece on this at the moment, analysing the results from our first ever EDI Leadership and Governance Survey. Mm-hmm. So I'm right in the thick of this at the moment. But I think the more the point I was making in the meeting was actually we struggled with the data. We struggled to capture the data mm-hmm. in the beginning. And there were barriers in our infrastructure, in our systems, that meant we couldn't really get it perfect in the beginning. We initially wanted to survey the whole membership, but actually our systems just didn't quite allow it. Mm-hmm. So we've ended up, we had to delay it, but we did want to continue the initiatives. And that was a big point for us, that waiting for the data wasn't an option. And I think there were some people who would have preferred it within it. And there were some discussions around that of, should we just try harder to get the data? But actually, you know, for a lot of us, we were like, well, actually, there's already an evidence base that some of these interventions work. So why wouldn't we do them straight away?
Yeah.
And I think actually analysing that survey data now, we're seeing that actually in some of the targets that we had set, we have already reached them. Mm-hmm. And had we waited for the data, we'd have spent, you know, kind of the first 3 or 4 years kind of just waiting for the data to get to that point where we had the infrastructure. And it wasn't worth it. Mm-hmm. You know, it wouldn't have been worth it. I think we've made significant progress in the meantime. And actually, the data is showing a really positive picture for us. In terms of how we did it, we used the EDIS DAISY guidance mm-hmm. as a foundation, which was really helpful for us. I think it's really interesting looking at the data now. So one of the things that the questions that doesn't always kind of go quite so well is the disability question, mm-hmm. because a lot of people who would meet the legal definition of disabled don't identify with the term. No. So what we've done is we've actually asked the question in both ways. We've asked the question around the disability, but then we've also asked it in terms of explaining it out more as long-term health conditions. And it's interesting that the response rate for the disability question is exceptionally low. But then when you look at the sort of wider definition, the long-term health conditions, we actually are above the kind of 20%, which is the sort of national sort of demographic average in the UK.
Yeah, no, and that makes sense. I mean, and you would have the same, which I know more about than disabilities on the LGBTQ issues, depending on how you ask and your definition of being gay, the percentage of the population will differ quite a lot. And so asking questions and definitions is sometimes important. But I think the whole data thing is incredibly important and incredibly challenging, and something we should probably have a longer chat about at some point. I also think sometimes it's slightly overrated compared to just doing things. Anyway, as you're moving ahead, Lorna, you're chair-elect of ARMA. How do you see this process going forward? I know it's not only up to you, but as a chair-elect, you, of course, has some say in this.
Yeah, no, I think it's exciting and reflecting on the work that we've already done, but not resting at all on our laurels. And I think that's a really big mistake, again, that organisations and individuals make, is thinking about, oh, I've done this great stuff, so we're finished. We're really inclusive.
Yeah.
You have to continually commit to that, and also the changes that you might experience, whether that's through your community or the environment, etc. So a few things are happening at the moment. Sapna's been leading work on our recent survey that we did with colleagues in our governance structures, so to understand the diversity and representation on our committees and our leadership structures. And she's been pulling together a report that we're planning to share with our community. so that we're being more transparent about that, but also so that we can reflect on these are some of the things we've been doing so far and thinking about recommendations in terms of what we're going to be doing next. We're currently in the midst of delivering our current strategic plan, which goes up to 2024. So very soon we will be developing our new strategic plan. And a decision that we made back in 2021, which we talked about in the session, was that EDI was one of our strategic priorities because, we, I think Sapna in the session made the reflection that whilst, yes, you want it to be part of everything, if you're not in a strong position to do so, you need to actually have the focus and have it, so it's visible, everyone's committed to it and it's there. So we'll need to reflect for our new strategic plan. What does that mean for, the next 3 years as well? But I think it is that. It's the continual visibility of it, continual commitment to EDI. And I think one of the things I've noticed through the work that we've done is just a general, the awareness level's risen. So practice has changed, sometimes just very small things that seem to make quite a big difference. And I think that's what we want to continue to see, is encouraging, our organisation and our communities to continue to commit to being more inclusive, whether that's through how we run our events, whether that's through how we recruit, like we talked about earlier. So yeah, I'm excited, but it's big shoes to fill as well.
Well, I'm pretty sure there's a very good reason why they chose you as chair. From across the sea, I'm quite confident all will be good. But I have one last question, because this is, of course, about how you work within ARMA and within the organization. But the members, of course, I mean, diversity isn't just a challenge in research management organizations. It's also very much a challenge in research organizations themselves and for the researchers that your members support. Do you have a sense of this have some trickle-down effect on the daily work of research managers that you work with this, or has it become a separate issue?
I mean, it's UK universities in particular, as well as our funders and independent organisations have obviously been thinking about this a lot more in the last couple of years in particular. So we have, thinking about it was the phrase that I used. Yeah. Thinking about it, not necessarily taking action to actually support positive change. And I think there's a whole host of initiatives underway and some very positive things happening and some very negative things happening as well. I mean, I work in an institution where we have significant challenges around equity, diversity and inclusion. And we have, it's actually been kind of wrapped into a wider programme, which is all about respect, is the phrase that they use. But we've found actually more of our community-led initiatives have been more successful and positive. So, for example, we have a number of staff networks set up that are really kind of the heart of our colleagues. Their staff, some of them are staff and students, some of them are just staff facing. And they are really key and critical to feeding into leadership and commenting on initiatives. And that's something I think Durham, from my own institution's perspective, has got better at, is, engaging with the networks around, we're going to introduce this policy. Can you talk to your, communities about it? Give us feedback. They've also done things like we had new leadership programs developed for our executive, and the staff networks all commented on that and they picked the provider and things. So I think that's positive. But I think, reflecting on our, how we lead as ARMA, I feel like most organisations in the UK could spend a bit of time doing that, because I think that's maybe where we're falling down slightly. And a big thing that we've had feedback wise from our community in ARMA is they are being expected to support colleagues with various EDI related initiatives, whether that's, submitting funding proposals that have gender statements in them, whether that's running, selection panels internally and trying to make sure they're inclusive as possible. One area where I think we have seen really great progress in the UK is we have what are called impact accelerated accounts, which are, funds that we disperse ourselves to fund projects that are all about, societal, economic, etc. impact. And there's some really great practice that's been introduced and encouraged by the funders. And that's everything from reciprocal mentoring right through to the, you know, blind selection processes that have been used, etc. So I think there's a lot of learning there we could be sharing. But sorry, I could talk about this all day, Jacob, so I'll stop there. And pass to Sapna.
We'll say that for another episode. Yeah. Sapna.
Yeah, so I think, you know, Laura's obviously, I guess, talked about how it's getting into the granularity, but I think it's also worth mentioning, I guess, the opportunities we have to influence from an organisation to organisation basis. So within the last couple of years, ARMA joined EDIS, which is a coalition of around 30 organisations across the sector, which are science health facing. So it's got members who are industry based, as well as third sector funders and some university members as well. So that's a really great forum for sharing learning. Now, much of what we do within EDIS is organizations talking, you know, sharing their learning about what they've each been doing. And through that, we accelerate progress across the coalition, because actually we're all sharing ideas for what we can be doing better. We're sharing resources and we're developing tools that work for everyone. So I think that really does give us a huge opportunity to influence and to learn, you know, across the piece from what's going on in the sector and how we can all be doing it better.
Well, I'm going to say thank you for now, and brilliant session. I'm sorry it was so late in the day. I don't think enough people got to see it. It was too close to the conference dinner on that day at the ARMA conference. But inspiring work, and I really hope that other research management organisations are listening and get inspired by your work and do some of the same. And we'll just do another follow-up. We had Jennifer on when you started or in the beginning of this journey. Now we've had this chat, and then we'll see in a couple of years how far along you are by then.
Perfect. Thank you very much for having us.
Yeah, thanks.
And that was my conversation with Sapna and Lorna. And, we both really enjoyed the presentation they gave. As I like to say, they were the warm-up act for us at the conference. I'm not sure they agree, but it's some really fascinating work they've done in ARMA around diversity, and I hope it inspires a lot of other national organizations, but also some of the international organizations to do work on these on some of these topics. We will share our reflections both on this and the next interview after we listen to them both, because I think there are some connections between the two, which is funnily enough why we put them in the episode together. Before we chat anymore, here is the conversation I had with Dipti and Rosie about the importance of the role and the importance of representation, as they are both the first women of color to be chair of these organizations, Encura and ARMA. So enjoy my conversations with them, and then we'll be back right after with some reflections and thoughts and see if we can put it all together. And so I am joined here with Rosie and Dipti. Thank you for being here, both of you. It's an absolute pleasure to have you both. And first of all, congratulations on the election, Dipti, on being chair-elect for ARMA.
Thank you so much.
And we invited you here today to have a bit of a chat about the importance of representation, because you are, of course, the first woman of color to become chair of ARMA. And Rosie, you are past president of Encura, where you were the first Black woman to be president of Encura, despite it having existed for more than 50 years. So, first of all, Rosie, do you have any advice for Dipti as she moves into this role chairing ARMA?
Thank you, Jacob. It's a pleasure to be here, and I am incredibly honored to be here with Dipti, and congratulations on being the chair elect for IRMA. One of the things I would like to say, just a couple of, you know, of different points, is that for you as a leader, you were elected to be in this position by all of your colleagues, and that in itself is a testament to what you bring to the organization, and that the organization has embraced you being in this new position for the next few years. And that is something that is quite an honor for that. One of the things is, speaking, if I could give some advice to you, especially coming into this new role, as for me, coming from being past president of INCURA, the National Council of University Research Administrators in the U.S. in 2021. So a few points I want to say is that, first of all, be incredibly authentic. Be true to yourself. That is something that people really look to, leaders for. And your actions, and sometimes will speak louder to the words. And that in itself, I really truly believe, is one of the things that a lot of your colleagues have seen within you. The other thing is to continue to engage others, bring others into the fold, because we both have got into our respective leadership roles. You know, it's not because we were rubber stamped in. It's because we were very inclusive and engaging and bring others to the fold. Another piece of advice I would give you is to be courageous. And being courageous is sometimes can be sometimes a very lonely place, and it can be a very rewarding place. And when you're courageous, especially when you're leading a major organization, sometimes decisions that are made, you know, may not be in line with what others will think they need to do. But on the other side, being courageous is doing things that have never been done before. So continue to be courageous, because knowing that you have your entire village of this organization that is continuing to support you as you then will be the leader. And then the last piece of advice I will give you is, know that you are not alone. We all came to this space of, you know, whether it was me in my presidency, you as your chair elect, soon to be chair, we all came to this place not alone, but with folks. And just know that at any time that you need to just have, you know, someone you could speak some, you know, just bounce some ideas off, know that you have your village, you've got your fellow colleagues like myself, and we are all here to make sure that we support you in your success.
Very good. And wow. and both the support, but also some very practical advice in many ways to moving forward in this. Dipti, and perhaps a bit both of you, but first Dipti, there was no one running against you, so that speaks for itself. That no one dared, and that speaks to all your qualifications. But this is, of course, also a conversation about representation, and how important is representation in this? Do you think? But also, how do we avoid it being a question of tokenism? Because that is a different balance to strike.
Yes. I should just say, Rosie, thank you so much for your advice and steer and, nodding away there. You wouldn't be able to hear that, but it was I was just astounded by your advice and your mentorship and your support. And most importantly for me, your confidence in me, and everything you've said, it's just especially using language like a continuation. So just very, very pleased to hear that. And thank you so much. Delighted. In terms of your question, Jakob, I think it's what Rosie was saying there in terms of being authentic. So I am slightly uncomfortable in some ways, or I was. I think I'm getting more used to it now in terms of being the woman of color, and that's my representative role. But I think when I hear about authenticity, and I think that's that's more meaningful to me, and it's more closer to the way I would like to be perceived. And in that case, I don't feel any fear of tokenism, because I feel, you know, that I, like as Rose said, look, I'm the best person for this role at this particular time. Exactly. And it just, it's, I would have said actually before, it just happens to be that I'm of Indian background. But now I kind of think maybe it's good that I am of Indian background, and that I can actually use this position to advocate for that, and for, especially I'm really struck by what Rosie said there in terms of, you know, bringing up others.
Yeah.
And not just shutting the door behind me. And actually, so even actually since the election, I can really see a difference in terms of the types of people who've been coming back to me and, you know, congratulating me, or, you know, offering their support and mentorship, and then sort of people seeing me as a potential mentor as well and a coach. So it's definitely, it's definitely broadened my perspective and made me think a bit more about how I can be more inclusive.
I think that that is really important. Rose, do you have any reflections on the role of representation? Because, of course, in the US, it's a different situation, both politically, et cetera, and history-wise. But what do you have any reflection on that? As you mentioned, you talked about authenticity and how that reflects in on representation.
I think representation comes in very many different flavors, so to speak, when we think about representation. And just as Dipti had said, it's like we just happen to be externally, this is what we look like. We can't change what we look like. So that's what people see, is like, you know, we're both first women of color, respectively, for each of our organizations. But it's so, representation is so much deeper than what is externally what people see. And I think that as women, we have to be women of color, with that representation, we have to then take that and say, how can we bring other folks into the fold and making things extremely inclusive?
Yeah.
Because what we're seeing now, it's just the tipping point of what we're seeing across the globe and very many different countries. We've got to make sure we've got representation, for example, in neurodiversity, representation, not just in what we see, you know, race, gender. There's so much representation that we need to be able to embrace. Geographic representation, because there are many countries that are still not at the table with research administration with our roles. So we really have to look at representation really much broader, because there's so many ways to slice that representation. And I think that's what makes our different roles of being unique, inclusive individuals that are really here to bring others along and say, hey, traditionally, we may have inadvertently have missed certain types of individuals or even institutions that should have been brought to the table. So we have an opportunity that our eyes have been opened. And we said, you know what, now is a great opportunity to use our roles for the, you know, for the greater good, and, you know, really bringing representation in a much broader way.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting. As you said, this is the color of your skin. You can't hide from it. And compared to, because if I wanted to, I could hide the fact that I'm gay.
Yeah.
And as many gay people did for many years growing up. And I think for me, at least, that there was the importance of representation, that you needed to see that someone like me could actually get married, could have children if that's what you want. You could be anything you wanted. You could be a politician. You could be a person of power. Or you could, like me, be just incredibly normal and incredibly boring and have a 9-to-5 job, a house, a husband, a dog, and two cars, and like everybody
and the
else.
Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So I think that's where sometimes it comes in, that you need that. Sometimes that visibility is more important than we actually think. I wanted to ask a bit, you, Dipti, because you also become president at a time where there's some very interesting projects going on that IAMA is involved in. First of all, of course, the RM roadmap, which we hope to do more on later as it once it really kicks off, but also in the agreement on reforming research assessment that we have both spoken about in different contexts. Where do you see your role in that, and how should we think about diversity and representation in those projects? A nice and easy question, just
yeah,
to
so, I mean, I think just to start me up. I think in terms of RM roadmap, it's about skills and capacity development,
exactly,
and recognition of the profession. So I think in some cases it's a relatively new profession, mm-hmm, even compared to sort of the NCURA members. A lot of the IAMA members are very new to this, and they don't even have recognition in their own universities or their own institutions, no, compared to even wider, and then obviously in the countries. So that's where Action 17 comes in as well. So in terms of representation, I suppose in that case, it's about being able to do the role properly, but then also being able to, bring others along, and that whole piece that the roles you were speaking about, who's at the table now, yeah, and who should be at the table, and how do we widen that and deepen it. Mm-hmm. In relation to responsible research assessment, I think that's perfect for diversity, because it is about broadening horizons and recognizing non-standard career paths. And unfortunately, I've been in a similar position myself, that often the non-standard career paths are faced by those in unrepresentative groups.
Obviously
something like the impact of career breaks or maternity leaves, mm-hmm, and then obviously in terms of we see it in our case particularly, that some of our early career researchers are people of colour,
yeah,
and who have very, precarious contracts and are not going up the ladder, the career ladder, on the standard linear path. So I think that opening, but again, it's if I keep going back to that table analogy, because it's really, it's again widening and bringing different people to the table that are not there at the moment, mm-hmm, and should be.
Yeah.
And in terms of research managers, I always have to keep bringing it back to the practical side, which I think that's kind of, sometimes it's seen as very low level and it's very boring and it's just practical, but that is mostly what we do. And actually, it's, for me, the execution, the implementation is so important.
Yeah.
And so bringing, in terms of responsible research assessment, it's how we actually can, so we can have these very nice ideas and very high level ideas, and that we should be open to everybody and anybody, but how do we actually do that?
Yeah.
And I think it's often research managers who have to enforce it and actually translate the strategy into execution. So
yeah,
I think there's so many ways that we can, we're at the core. Now, obviously, I would say that I always have to speak up for the profession, but I think, I just can't see where we're not, in terms of all those areas.
No. Dipti, Rosie, do you have anything to add?
Well, I'm not familiar with the, I haven't done the deep dive into the RM roadmap, but I could see some similarities with what has happened, because as Dipti had said, fortunately in the U.S., we've been much further along this path, mm-hmm, than other organizations. So we've almost have had like a head start to try and bring folks through this career path. Like, it's not just a job, it's an actual, it's an actual profession. So another thing too is what we're starting to see too, is what we've started to see many, many years ago, especially within the U.S. with the federal government, with giving a lot of the funding to research institutes and universities, is that they have made a push to make sure that underrepresented groups are then given a, you know, opportunities to then be able to compete on so many different ways. So I think a lot of that has translated into where you see that in the support areas of research managers and research administrators being able to say, okay, where can we bring a lot of these individuals up through career path? Because now you've got degrees in research administration. And I'm like, that was never heard of when I went through school. So I was like, oh, I've got to get a master's. That's it. You know, there's a master's in research administration.
Yeah.
So like I said, you're starting to see a lot of these things starting to really gain a lot more momentum, where it starts off with the scientists, and now you're starting to see it spill over into other areas.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really incredible development to see. Also, just in the 10 years I've been in the profession, I think it's when it comes to the diversity issues. Also, I think we had with this interview is of course our chat with Lorna and Sapna from ARMA and the work they have done in ARMA and the discussion we had there about diversity literacy, because we always ask. That's my main question when we talk to people as well, is who's at the table, but. Everybody can't be at the table, depending, of course, on the size of the table. But in most cases, and if we insist on everybody being represented at the table, then it easily becomes a question of tokenism. So I think it'll be really interesting, both in research management, but also in the research management organizations, to have this diversity literacy developing, because we need people to include it, even for the people who are not present in that moment when a decision is being made. But having you as chair of ARMA is, of course, a great first step in this direction. And as we talked about, there are some really interesting projects going on. So we'll see what happens, and then hopefully we'll have you again later and see later in your presidency and see how you think is going and what's happened on both on the projects and internally in ARMA. It's also changing a lot as an organization. But for now, I just want to say thank you both for joining us here for this quick interview and for chatting to us both at the ARMA conference. And thank you for the advice, Rosie, and best of luck to you, Dipti.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
And that was the interview we did with Dipti and Rosie. And before we dive into talking about our reflections on that, we should perhaps explain a bit why you weren't in the interviews.
Yes, I feel like we need to confess and explain to everybody what went on here. So we were incredibly organized.
On the learning journey we've been on.
It is, yeah. I mean, we were so organized going into the ARMA. In fact, you got all the equipment and everything. We were going to do all these wonderful interviews at the conference. And in fact, we did do wonderful interviews at the conference. The two of us conducted both of these interviews at the conference, but unfortunately we kind of just got a couple of little settings wrong on the equipment and, well, the recordings just didn't really happen, I think is the best way to put it. Yeah. So we've had to record them again. And when we did record them again, unfortunately I wasn't around on the two times that our guests could do. So that's why Jakob did them. We tried our very best to mirror the conversations, which were great conversations, trust us, at the conference. That's why I wasn't in on any of those interviews. But thank you to Jakob for stepping in and doing those. But in terms of a bit of a reflection,
thank you
Go on.
No, and also thank you, a big thank you to all four of them for doing the interviews again. First and foremost,
yes.
I think that's
and being just as fabulous the second time round as the first time.
Exactly. But anyway, what were your, that you weren't in the interviews, what were your reflections on them?
Yeah, I mean, for us, I mean, I think one of the ideas about interviewing them, all four of them, was the fact that, you know, we if you've listened to plenty of episodes of our podcast, you'll know that sometimes we get a bit frustrated by the lack of progress, I think, around EDI in research, research management, research institutions and things like that. But we thought these were two really potent, strong examples of where progress is being made. And Armour, you know, if we go back to Sapna and Lorna and their conversation around what Armour have been doing over the last 3 years, you know, you can see considerable progress. And one of the things I really like about what they've done is the fact that they've, you know, they accepted they're basically starting from scratch, you know, but they've tried to do this work in a structured way and learn from it as they go through. So they've been testing things out in terms of their recruitment of board members, their recruitment of staff, and things like that, and just seeing what works. But in addition to that, they haven't been afraid to go and get some outside help to come in and, you know, do some training, help facilitate the conversations, help facilitate their thinking. And I found it quite interesting that they recognized that they thought they knew a lot more. When I say they, I'm talking about Armour as a whole. You know, they thought they knew a lot more about EDI issues and what inclusion might look like in the Armour space until they really started this process, and then they realized that actually they didn't know anywhere near as much as they thought, and bringing in external people has been a key part of that. So part of all the work that they're doing and continue to do, because it's a journey as well for Armour, reflects on issues like why representation is so important and things like that, which leads us very neatly into the second conversation with Dipti and Rosie, where sometimes I think we don't, if we're in a minority group, we don't always recognize the power of our own representation. And putting aside for a moment all the issues around, you know, burnout and having the burden of being the representative, being in a position of power can give you, or can send a clear message to others that, you know, you can make it. You know, so for Dipti, you know, coming into that role, and Rosie having done the presidential role in Ancuria previously, it just opened people's eyes in terms of who can do these roles, and effectively they became role models without probably even consciously thinking about becoming role models, because I don't think that's why either of them stepped into these roles. So, which is fantastic,
exactly.
But it also demonstrates, and I think Rosie touched on this, is that it gives, you know, if you're going to do this kind of stuff, and if you're going to be this, you know, be a representative or use the power of the position, in effect, of where you are, make sure you are your authentic self, and being your authentic self can really help to change perceptions and help move things forward, help move the conversation forward. So I thought that were two absolutely fascinating conversations. I know you'll have some other reflections as well, but I'm encouraged overall by the direction of travel and what organisations are trying to do, and the fact that these four people, four good, well, outstanding people in their own right in terms of the fields that they operate in, but good leaders within research management are doing, these four women across Europe and the UK.
And the US.
Oh, and the US, yes, of course. Just because we're in Prague, I thought they're all in Europe, but yes.
Yes,
the US.
Exactly. Yeah. No, of course, completely agree. And I asked about it in the interview with Lorna and Sapna. I think the self-reflection part was really important. And partly because it links back to how we work, and when we do workshops on and talk about cultural intelligence, that the first step isn't to understand everybody else and how mad they are. The first thing is actually to understand your own culture. And that level of starting by with the self-reflection, I think, is really important. And a step that I think a lot of people would actually jump past when doing this work, either because they tend to focus on the culture of everybody else, or they jump to policy. And the fact that they actually did this part and looked at the training of themselves instead of the training of everybody else, or producing a lot of policy papers, which they probably did as well, I think is incredibly interesting. And shared across the two, I think it shows the importance of leadership. And it probably comes down to authenticity as well, either through the authenticity of being a part of a minority group yourself, or perhaps the authenticity of recognizing that you're not part of the of a minority group, and giving space for this to happen, and giving space for someone else to lead this, as it is my impression happened in Arma. And I think that that's an incredibly important lesson to carry from both these interviews, and it is of course based on some level on authenticity in different ways, and I agree that we don't, the whole carrying the burden of a minority group, are you ready to do that or not, and do you have to? We've discussed this a number of times in different ways on the podcast here. But it is important, and we know that, and I mentioned that as well in the interview, that growing up as a gay kid in the 80s in northern Denmark in a small village, I had no idea what it meant to be gay. I probably didn't even know the word, and even I did, I had no idea that you could, what sort of life you could lead, and how we need these different role models, including in positions of power, to know that you can actually be, no matter who you are, you can be the chair of IAMA or president of Incura. And I think that's incredibly, incredibly important. I will, however, and I'm that's the gift of hindsight, of course, pick a bit of a fight with Dipti, and I don't think we would actually have a fight if she was here. It's just a question of time. We'd only had a short amount of time with them, so I couldn't really discuss it when she was here. But I think she's, and again, I don't think we would really disagree on it if she was here. But we talked about the RM roadmap project and the agreement on reforming research assessment. And on the RM roadmap, she said, oh, but that's about skills. And I think that is a bit dangerous. And I don't think she really means that. But I think there's a real danger here that we're about to do the same mistake as we did in research, where now we're trying to picking up because we reduced everybody to a degree or an H index, basically reducing them to skill. And now we're talking about we have to look at diversity. If the RM roadmap ends up at the same place, reducing research managers and administrators to a certain skill set or a degree or something like that, we are making the exact same mistake. And then we can spend the next 30, 40 years, 50 years, as we've done in research, to declutter that mess we have made. So I think that's the only thing where I'll actually say And we talked about in our own catch up on the conference in the last episode. I think there's something that IAMA and the other people present in the project, and we will try our best to get involved there as well. But there's something there that we have to be aware of, I think.
It's a challenge. Perhaps that's a good way to conclude the discussion, presenting a challenge effectively to everybody in research management. It's not just IAMA or those involved in the RM roadmap. It's everybody in research management and research more broadly to take questions of diversity and inclusion into account.
Yeah. And on that note, we should perhaps refer back to the chat with Lorna and Sapna and how the organizational talk about diversity, how they felt that it had impacted the members in their daily work at their research institutions. So it will have some sort of a trickle-down effect, hopefully, and that hopefully as well can affect the discussions in the RM roadmap project.
Yeah.
So again, thank you to the four people, both for letting us talk to them in Prague and again online later on due to technical challenges from our side. Thank you to Yama for letting us doing some recordings at the conference. I'm very grateful for that. Yeah, I think that's about it for the conference at the moment.
Yeah, we have aspirations to do one more episode, but again, not surprisingly, there were some technical challenges, so we will see if we can get that to work. If we can, then we will have one more conversation about our panel at the conference, but we'll keep everybody posted on that. But
yeah. So this episode was edited by Arthur Deligne. If you liked what you heard, please share it on Twitter, LinkedIn, wherever you are, and ask colleagues, etc., to give it a shout. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to these episodes. And give us a follow on Twitter at DivresPod, DIVRESPOD. DM us there, send us an email, whatever, to suggest topics or interesting guests we should have on the podcast. And if you're interested in our consultancy, the workshops and everything else we do around diversity and internationalization in research and research management, please visit diversityunity.com. I think that was it for now, wasn't it, Lachlan?
It is, yes. Thank you for joining us for this episode. Yep. And we will catch you all very soon.
Bye.
Bye.